We're in the book of Revelations. God's book writes history in advance. I've been letting God's book paint with a broad brush for weeks. And I hope that you that have been listening are beginning to quickly adjust all the gears of your mind when you hear some of the symbols out of the book of Daniel and the symbols out of the book of Revelation. I've been antagonizing a few. They're outnumbered about 9 to 1, but I've been antagonizing a few in historic traditional churches, particularly the Catholic. No one, interestingly enough, in the Greek Orthodox Church that suffers some of the same homogenized traditions with heathen sources. As I have pointed out, the heathen source of so many traditions that grip the Church of Jesus Christ. It could be said equally to the Jews who listen. You better look into the history of some of your special days and feasts, particularly the days of sorrow, where Babylonish rites crept into the stream of the Hebrew faith. And in a struggling attempt to find events in Hebrew history that would closely approximate the days and seasons and liturgical activities of Babylonish heathen worship, they would actually bend history. As one illustration that I've used to try to make one of the feast days of heathen Babylonian worship of Tammuz match and make it a day of legitimate sorrow in the Hebrew faith, they linked it to the torching of the city of Jerusalem and the temple therein when Nebuchadnezzar came to carry Zedekiah away. But because there's a one-day discrepancy in the date, they had to add a little to the story and have the torches lay overnight so they would ignite on the proper day that was fixed as a day of sorrow and burning of torches and logs so that they could call it a commemoration of a sad day for Israel, instead of what it really was in its origin, a sad day for the worshipers of Tammuz. Every faith has had to separate its origins from the blendings that come in as they encounter competitive faiths. The reason the Catholic Church is so much on target, it's the oldest one of the bunch. It's accumulated more tradition over the years. It's made more adjustments. It's had, in simple numerical historic fact, more times when it was less than what it ought to be. If you've existed for 1,000 years, the times when you've made mistakes are going to outnumber the times that a church like Faith Center that's existed 33 years has made mistakes. If you have been duped by a wrong voice at some time, the chances of being duped over 1,000 years much greater than 33 years or 100 years. Well, I'm not I've said it over and over again. I'm sure not afraid to say it if I ever reach the conclusion that it is. But I'm not saying that the Catholic Church is the harlot woman of the book of Revelations. I'm saying any established church that marries government and becomes a false prophet of humanism and rides upon the back of government for its power rather than the power of God, it is in danger of becoming either in embryo form, in forerunner form. As the spirit of Antichrist is already at work in the land, so is the spirit of the false prophet at work in the land. And any church that has power, that is willing to prostitute that power and make a marriage with government and aim its directives toward humanistic goals and make peace with government at the price of serving its Lord and lean on government for its power and authority is, in potential, the harlot church of the book of Revelations. I do not share what some prophecy preachers believe, that Babylon as a city is over, and that mystical Babylon is also the mystical city Babylon. I do not believe that Rome and its seven hills is the city of Babylon in the Bible. I therefore make room in my interpretations of prophecy for not only Babylon to be rebuilt as a city, but for the final world church to headquarters there, because I have seen the church follow money wherever it is. Money ought to follow the church. And God's people ought to give to God. But when you compromise with humanism, you're going to follow power and money. The reason I'm so hard-headed and never allow anybody to gain access to me by gifts. In fact, the surest way to make it very hard to have access to Gene Scott is to be a large donor. I believe what God's Word says about paying no more attention to the one who comes in with a gold ring on his finger than the poorest one that comes in off the street. I believe that giving ought to be because of the Word that is preached and respect and value for the gift ministry of the true, honest preacher of the Word. I cut my teeth with Oral Roberts. I went in there to help get a faculty and lay the foundations for a university because I thought he meant business. I saw his little black book. I never ever had a meeting of the partners that he didn't have instant access to the little book that told him the top few donors, until no one ever walked in front of him and there was never a chance that he could make a mistake by being a bit abrupt or possibly cut off a $50,000 or $100,000 a year donor. Man, I get the slips, I don't even know. On more than one occasion, I've romped the toes of one of our biggest donors. The ways of men and the ways of God are not one and the same. Now, I repeat, I am not getting on the Catholic Church. However, if the shoe fits, wear it. The Catholic Church can be. In fact, if I were the devil, I'd rather have them than anybody because they got more in their clutches. They have more capacity to rule the kings of this world. Very few kings that are not flattered and seek an audience with the Pope. I haven't even found Jimmy Carter, who can't run a gas station, seeking an audience with me. So that tells the story. The chances of me being the false church sort of go down, because I haven't got that many to marshal for Antichrist yet. I'm better at needling him than I am at helping him. That's a good, safe posture, and I stay at that job. The Pontifex Maximus came from the heathen. Peter is a cognate word for the Babylonian interpreter, the head teacher of the mystery religions that rule Rome. It became convenient to get those that already respected a teacher whose defining name was Peter. If they could somehow link up a Christian leader with the already set frame of reference to respect the teacher called Peter. They want adherents who were ready to listen to that voice without any kind of criticism or evaluation needed. Hence, the task of trying to link Peter as the founder of the church at Rome. He may have. He may have been to Rome. But there is no real solid historic evidence for it. You got to rely on the weakest of tradition. There's about 100 times as much evidence for the resurrection of Christ as there is that Peter ever saw Rome. And that's historic fact, folks. The worship of the Virgin Mary, the satanic church as a caricature, the cross. I said this morning I'd talk about the sign of the cross. Usually I start with the verses of Scripture and get to this at the end. I'm reversing it today. Every primitive religion in the world has at the root origin of their faith the Great Father, the One, Creator of all. Most primitive religions have Him rising out of the sea and being not only the Creator, but the created. He is the original God and the original man. Every kingship right throughout the history of kings. Archaeologists and those who study myths and comparative religions around the world are amazed at the uniformity of the kingship right, which is the root in Western civilization of the concept of the divine right of kings. It all goes back to this God-man king who ruled on this earth at a time that some in various literature called the Golden Age. There is a body of scholars, and I think I can be allowed to do this today. About once or twice a year I do something like this, because I got a record of 4.5 years of laying an awful lot of Bible down, which means I'm entitled on occasions to lay some of these other foundations. There is, they're in the minority, and they've never been able to sell their case. But there is a small body of scientists dating from the 1600s who refuse to believe that this universe was always like it is now. The presupposition behind all study of history and archaeology and the dating of happenings on this globe and in this universe have assumed the fixed nature of our galaxy and our universe as we now know it. Every ancient religion worshipped Saturn. The Greek god Cronus is Saturn. Every religion, from the worship of the sun, they say it's because they were on such high altitude, is cold nonsense. From the Aztecs to the Incas, from the Eskimos to the Polynesians, from the Aboriginal tribes of New Zealand and Australia, to the Laplanders, to the Chinese, to the Mesopotamian Fertile Crescent, to Egypt. Without exception, their worship of the sun links the sun with Saturn. I would guess that nobody in my range, and if anybody, very few, could even find Saturn. Could even find it in the sky at night. We assume the day begins at sunrise. We assume the world and sun worshipers have always welcomed his arrival at the dawn and his setting into the nether regions at the end of the day. We fail to recognize that Yule Day and the birth of the god identified with the sun is a winter solstice time. Why, if you're worshiping the sun, middle of the winter? Why does God hate sun worship so much? And why is sun worship universally the root of the strongest compelling worship of a force other than God? It's universal. Dagon was the fish god of the Philistines. He was the same god as the sun god Nimrod, who became Baal and Tammuz in Mesopotamia. They just went back a little behind it to the original one God that came out of the sea, the original man God. The Philistine concept of Dagon, fishing God originally. Still, symbolized in the robes of the Pope and the split fish mouth mitre that he wears on his head. A direct picture and replica of that ancient fish god Dagon. Now, the assumption of science, and I have to confess, I haven't been convinced yet, but neither do I rule it out. The assumption of science is the sun has always been as it now is. That the universe has always been as it is. Look, I did an undergraduate master's preparation in geography and geology, getting ready to do a PhD at Cal in the geography department, world famous because it was dominated by a man who linked anthropology and geography and socioeconomic cultural geography more than any other man in the nation at that time. I had to live with the challenges to my faith in the paleontological sedimentation of life forms that are laid down. I had to face up to the evidence on this earth of the glacial age. And the assumption is, the universe has always been the same. But that assumption has to deal with a universal community concept in the mind of every cultural nation in this world. Their oldest myths have them worshiping not the sun as we know it, but Saturn. They have them worshiping a sun, Saturn, that was stationary. All the oldest images of a god have him seated. How many of you know that? You see the Buddha? Seated. You see the god in Egypt? Seated. You see all the old hieroglyphics that portray the god? Seated. Now, it's later going to become a woman with the little boy god on her thigh. But the original oldest ones, a seated god, the symbol of rest. It became the fifth dimension of direction because they used to portray the oldest hieroglyphic symbol of God is a little circle dot with four lines going out of it, like that. In the earliest hieroglyphics in some lands, God was simply drawn on a picture. If I had a blackboard, I'd draw it, but let me try to do it. A little circle dot with a line going from the dot four directions. And when you saw the circle and the line, that was God. Of course, it meant the God of the heathen concept, but that was the source of all light, all life, all energy. A fixed position. They used to then try to symbolize it with a god who was seated with four faces or with a head turning, trying to symbolize rest and non-movement paradoxically in the midst of movement. A god who turned in one place and saw everything. A god who did not move and yet moved, was stationary, resting, and yet turning everything. It became the hub of the wheel of time that flowed out into all religions. Now, I'm going to give a comparative religion course in about 15 minutes today that took me through years with Spiegelberg and Kishimoto and everybody else. There is a small band of scientists who happen to believe that the universe was not always as it now is. Then instead of the most prominent, fixed star in the constellation, for want of a better word, Saturn, with its encircling bands, hovered in a fixed position over the celestial pole and the North Polar area. And instead of a sun that would rise and then disappear on the horizon, Saturn was always there with its bands around it. Now, those that try to explain the hieroglyphics, the concept of the aura, the halo, the crown that always is a part of divine kingship rites, the egg, all these symbols, the rope, the snake that is eating its tail, they try to explain it as the aura around the sun because they assume what modern history does, which is a worship of the rising sun since Saturn has disappeared over the horizon. They assume there's no way that heathen, primitive societies could have built a religious worship on a little faint planet like Saturn that most of them couldn't see without telescopes as we now have it. I repeat, it's a very small group of scientists who believe this universe was not always the same. That Saturn had a fixed position. That this was the light. You can read the hymns and the Song of the Dead in the Egyptian books of religion. You can find it in every ancient culture, from the Incas to the Chinese. This fixed body in the sky with its encircling band around it. And God in every case is Saturn in those early days. Now, the Bible tells of a great cataclysm. Jeremiah saw the earth when there was no man, he says, as he would know him. And yet he saw cities, it is in the King James, Ayar in the Hebrew, which is meeting places of intelligent beings. He describes the earth as not a waste and a desolation. Now, for years, based upon an old bishop who used biblical chronologies to try to date the history of time, it has been assumed the earth is 7,000 years old. That assumption is based upon the accuracy of his chronologies. And that alone, and it also assumes there's no gap between Genesis 1:1 and 1:2. But when you read in the King James, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth was without form and void. The Hebrew, because it's a language of very few words relatively in its vocabulary, its symbols and words allow many alternative translations and meanings. You have to look to the context many times to know how to translate the particular word. Equally valid, you can read Genesis 1:1 and the phrases that follow. In the beginning, way back whenever, God created the heavens and the earth. And instead of reading, the earth was without form and void, which implies a creation of voidness, which, if you think about it for a moment, is logically contradictory. You don't create voidness and chaos. Just as literal and just as allowable, you can translate, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and the earth became. Not the heavens and the earth. And the earth. Let me read it. There are times I want to quote. There are other times it just seems to come through better. If you go right to the text and read it. In the beginning, God created the heaven and the earth. And the earth was without form and void. The heavens, how come it doesn't say, and the heaven and the earth was without form and void? You don't create something without form and void unless you're a painter of the modern kind who gets across the wall and throws paint globs at the canvas. Literally, we can read, and the earth became a waste and a desolation. Notice how interesting it is. Darkness. Notice the word was is put in italics, added by the translator. Literally, you can read, and the earth became a waste and a desolation and darkness. The earth became dark upon the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters. Jeremiah saw this earth prior to that. He saw it when there were meeting places of intelligent beings. He saw it good and beautiful. And then, to his amazement, He saw a cataclysm strike this earth. He said, I saw the mountains moved. Earthquakes and shakings. And literal, exact. You can parallel it in the figures in the Hebrew. The exact Hebrew word of Genesis 1-2. Jeremiah speaking. After the mountains move and the earth is shaken, he says, and the earth became a waste and a desolation, and light fled from it. Now, this is sheer speculation. I'm just saying, there is no reason to believe, since God is the one who created it all and controls it, there is no reason to believe. Sure, I know. You change the balance of this universe right now, you're going to wipe out this earth. Well, that's exactly what Genesis 1-2 says happened. This earth became a waste and a desolation. Everything was rearranged. The universe reshaped. We know from Isaiah 14. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer, son of the morning? I wonder why they call him son of the morning. How art thou cut down to the ground which didst weaken the nations? For thou hast said in thine heart, I will ascend into heaven. I will exalt my throne above the stars of God. I will sit also upon the mount of the congregation in the sides of the north. I've heard a lot of preachers, I haven't really figured it's that important, but in this context it might be. I've heard preachers preach down through the years, where's heaven? And inevitably they'll go to Isaiah and other places and say, wherever it is, it's north. There was a time when this universe might have been different. I will ascend above the heights of the clouds. I will be like the Most High. Yet thou shalt be brought down to hell, to the sides of the pit. They that see thee shall narrowly look upon thee and consider thee, saying, is this the man that made the earth to tremble and did shake kingdoms, that made the world as a wilderness and destroyed the cities thereof? Jesus said, I saw Lucifer cast down. Job speaks of Lucifer as the crowning cherub in the mountain of God. Every single heathen religion links the cross, links the great father who ultimately is encased in the womb that comes forth with the woman goddess worship who ascends to a height above the male counterpart. Every heathen religion has at its roots a worship of a sun that in its earliest renditions was a worship of Saturn, not the sun as we know it. And they have to stretch the symbols to make it look like the sun as we know it. Every heathen religion has the symbolism of the Holy Mount, above which the symbol of Saturn and the halo circles. Every heathen religion has in its roots four rivers. Genesis has got its root because Satan is always the caricature. Out of Eden, the heart of God, flow four rivers. You find in Genesis, every heathen religion has got the four rivers and the four winds flowing, but they all have it coming from this great mountain. Where do you think the roots of Mount Olympus are? It's rooted way in Greek mythology, way back to the roots in ancient religion of some holy mount, the top of the world. where the halo of the sun gives light, unmoving, and everything goes around it. Ezekiel saw Lucifer in Eden before he had fallen. He becomes lifted up in pride. Now I'm going to speculate, come the closest to the kind of far out preaching that if it were the norm of my preaching, I'd expect you to walk out and think I'd gone nuts. But I can rest upon the record of 4.5 years of laying God's Word down. I know how to separate speculation from fact. The fact is, there is nothing to assume that this universe has always been the same. What in the world in this universe can explain the polar caps and the glacial period? What in the world in this universe as we now know it can explain these records in God's book of a cataclysm striking the earth, mountains moving, and it becoming a waste and desolation, totally covered as waters of the deep, until God has to recreate all of it as it now is? Look, go back to Genesis 1. The Spirit of God moved upon the face of the waters, and God said, "Let there be light," and there was light. God saw the light that it was good, and God divided the light from the darkness, and God called the light day, and the darkness He called night, and the evening and the morning were the first day. That comes in the recreative period, after the earth became a waste and desolation. God said, "Let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters." And God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so, and God called the firmament heaven, and the evening and the morning were the second day. And God said, "Let the waters under the heaven be gathered together into one place. Let the dry land appear." And it was so, and God called the dry land earth. The gathering together of the waters called He seas. And God saw that it was good. God said, "Let the earth bring forth grass." Isn't that interesting? He's going to create animals. He's going to create man. He says, "Let grass come forth." The only thing that would survive the cataclysm would be seeds in the earth. That's the only thing. The herb yielding seed, the fruit tree yielding fruit, whose seed is in itself upon the earth. I didn't put it in there by accident. Already there. And it was so. God said, "Let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons, for days and years. Let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven, give light upon the earth." And it was so. And God made. This is after the earth became a waste and desolation. After the cataclysm hit it, God made. Two great lights. They weren't there before, friends. God made two great lights. The greater light to rule the day, the lesser light to rule the night. And He made the stars also. And God set them in the firmament of the heaven. He set them there. They weren't there before Genesis 1-2. They weren't in the original creation. They weren't there when the cataclysm that Jeremiah saw smashed it. They weren't there when Lucifer in Isaiah 14 was on this earth and terrified the inhabitants thereon. They weren't there in the earth that was saw or seen by Jeremiah. They weren't there when Ezekiel was in Eden, or rather when Lucifer was in Eden, as Ezekiel described. The cataclysm is hit now. God's recreating. He placed them. He rearranged this universe. Sure, it runs just like a clock. You can't change it a quarter turn. You change it, there'll be another cataclysm strike this earth. There is nothing in God's book and neither in history to support the presupposition. You've got to take the supposition first. That's why I say science starts with faith. You can't exist in this world without faith. The sun and the moon and the stars, He placed them. Then He said, let the waters bring forth abundantly. The moving creatures that have life, the fowl that may fly above the earth. God created great whales. Then He says, be fruitful and multiply and fill the waters, and fowl multiply in the earth. Then He created man in His own image, verse 27. In the image of God created He him, male and female, created He them. And God blessed them, and God said unto them, be fruitful. 28th verse, read it with me, folks. Be fruitful and multiply, and what? Loud and clear. First syllable. Replenish. How come He didn't say plenish? Why replenish the earth? Why not plenish it? I'm going to skip with 70 league boots. The description of Lucifer in Ezekiel. I went over it already with you. His pipes and his tabrets in him from his creation. His beauty. Thou was perfect. Well, let's just go clear on back. Son of man, take up a lamentation. Thou sealest up the sum full of wisdom and perfect in beauty. 12th verse. Thou hast been in Eden, the garden of God. Every precious stone was thy covering. And it names them. Thy tabrets and thy pipes was prepared in thee in the day that thou was created. Thou art the anointed cherub that covereth. I have set thee so thou wast upon the holy mountain of God. Thou hast walked up and down in the midst of the stones of fire. Thou wast perfect in thy ways from the day that thou wast created till iniquity was found in thee. He was in Eden before he was the fallen one appearing as a serpent. Now let me take 70 league boots and then come to Revelation. Most people who study the sources of the heathen viewpoints of a worship of Saturn and an identification with Saturn as a godlike being who also was on the earth and who ruled the earth. Usually those scientists do not believe in God's Word, do not believe in a living personal Satan, do not believe in a living God. Let me just throw it at you. I do not know that the Saturn theorists are right. If they're not right, then every heathen religion began its idol worship with an identification with the sun under Nimrod, the great hunter. It reached the stage where, when he died, he was identified with the sun. His wife conceived him again, reincarnation, incarnation of the same man Nimrod again as Tammuz in her womb, who comes forth as God-man on earth. The great tragedy of his death and then resurrection, and the circle starts again. She shifted it until all the religions begin to elevate the mother. And instead of God originally being the little dot with the lines, the next time you see it, the circle is around the lines. The three earliest hieroglyphics defining God was a circle with a dot with four lines, and it became a circle with a dot and the four lines. When that was done, the mother surrounded it all. Saturn's band held God, the original one, the seed in the middle, the egg became the symbol, the wheel became the symbol, the serpent eating his tail became the symbol, and wherever you turn, the mother and the incarnate Son on earth begins to take the dominant role. Now, where do these ideas come from? Mythologists try to say, in historic time, man saw Saturn, and some cataclysm shook it, and is there off in the night and can't be seen now. I advance the wild theory to some that Saturn was probably the peculiar domain of Satan as his seat. It's obvious that Satan ruled Earth in the pre-recreation age when he was in Eden, when, as Job says, he was the crowning cherub on the mountain of God, having full access to this earth, controlling the meeting places that Jeremiah saw. Saturn, no doubt, his crowning cherub location, as he had access through the heavenlies, and was, I repeat, the crowning cherub leading the music in the heavenlies.
This is the end of Side 1. For the rest of the message, please turn tape over to Side 2. Thank you.